So, welcome, Sureshwar. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mahatma Prabhu, for inviting me back. Vamcha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu yevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. It's been an eventful couple of weeks for me in terms of the ongoing development of the seminar I've been presenting around ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya. And the major development has been a more Gaudiya focus on the research.
As opposed to?
Well, not as opposed to, but let's say echoed by, or collaborative evidence I was presenting from other places, specifically the Sri Sampradaya. A couple of weeks ago, I brought up how the Sris call their founder Acharya the Udharak, which means the deliverer, the savior, and how all the gurus who come after him in the line, they're called Upakarak, which means that they are called benefactor gurus. And how do they benefit people? Well, they bring their disciples to the lotus feet of the founder Acharya in their line, in their case Ramanuja, who is the most prominent branch of the Lakshmi or Sri Sampradaya, and they engage their disciples in their founder Acharya's mission. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that our GBC committee, the Srila Prabhupada's position committee, was encouraging me to give an exclusive Gaudiya focus and not present other evidence as main. So I appreciated that, because that's what resonates most with us in ISKCON. We're after all coming in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, and Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, is representing specifically that line, and with its own mood and mission, and specifically with our founder Acharya's mood and mission.
So in other words, what we're talking about here is understanding from our own tradition the position of a founder Acharya and the relationship that everyone has who comes after that founder Acharya, mm-hmm. be he Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru, rank and file, temple president, GBC, whatever. Mm-hmm. What's the relationship everyone has with the founder Acharya and that everyone has with one another?
Right. All right. So what I'd like to do, Mahaprabhu, this time is go back a little bit in the Gaudiya, specifically the Gaudiya history of how this, you know, this fusion phrase, founder, English, Acharya, Sanskrit, came to be. Starting with...
Why is that important?
Because you'll see how the very position evolved. And specifically with that phrase. It's important because it does relate to the relationships, and you'll see that.
And you're also trying to establish that the position of a founder Acharya is of greater significance than what could we compare other great, to just a great Vaishnava who appears in the disciplic succession?
Well, this will come out in the history.
Okay.
So I think we should just go through it. And the relationships come out as we recount the evolution of the phrase.
Okay.
So let's look at right around Lord Chaitanya's time, since Gaudiya begins with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We have Srila Rupa Goswami, for example, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada, of course, gave to us as the nectar of devotion. And Srila Prabhupada saying things like that this is our law book. So if you look in NOD chapter 6, evidence regarding devotional principles, how to discharge devotional service, and after that is evidence regarding devotional principles. You'll see of the 64 devotional principles that Rupa Goswami lists, right in the top 10, or in the top 5, you have this phrase. It's specifically the references Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1, 2, verse 100, sadhu vartmanu, sadhu vartmanu vartanam. I don't know if I copied that right. I have to go back and check that. Anyway, the idea is, and here's how Prabhupada renders it in English, if you look in Nectar Devotion. Item number 4, following in the footsteps of great acharyas, teachers, under the direction of the spiritual master. So when I give my seminar, this kind of quote is coming on the heels of a lesson I teach called the Guru Principle, in which we identify how the Guru is one, but the Guru is also different. How is the Guru different? How did the Guru's... The Guru was one, first of all, because an authentic Guru is representing the original Guru, or Krishna. But still, Gurus differ basically in 3 ways. They differ by role. They can play different roles in our lives, like some are more parental, like Diksha. Some are more like well-wishing aunties and uncles, like Shiksha. And then we have the key role of a founder acharya. But let's just stick with the different roles of you know, Shiksha, Diksha, Gurus. So by role they differ, the Gurus in our lives. They differ by qualification. And Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear in Chaitanya Chaitamrita, specifically in that first chapter of CC, the spiritual masters. And people who want to know about Guru Tattva, go right to that chapter. It's the very first chapter, Vande Gurun. It's plural, Kaviraj Goswami, in his very first verse of the CC, Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan. He's offering his respectful obeisances unto his spiritual masters. And as we mentioned in the previous session, he has one initiating spiritual master he identifies as Lord Nityananda, but he says he has unlimited instructing spiritual masters. So the guru differs by role, by qualification. Prabhupada makes it very clear in that first chapter that the guru can either be from the liberated category or the non-liberated. And he says this also in letters. He can be like a super Uttam Adhikari Bhagavat, you know, Mahabhagavat type person. Or he may not be, strictly speaking, liberated, but if he's strictly following liberated souls, then he can also act as guru.
There's an example.
There is an example?
The example was given. One guru is in the spiritual world, and he's come down to this world. One guru is in this world, but he has one foot in the spiritual world. And one guru is in this world, and he's looking to the spiritual world. So different different levels of realization or originating positions. Mm-hmm. But their message is the same.
Their message is the same, and as long as they're delivering their disciples to the Sampradaya in an authentic way, that's the main thing. It's all about being transparent to the parampara. And then finally, the guru, let's see, there's role, there's qualification, and commitment. So someone, for example, who introduces me to Krishna consciousness, whom we variously call Vartma Pradarshika, or what's the other one? Patta Pradarshika, guru, the introducer guru. That's one level of commitment, that someone has seen fit to introduce you to Krishna consciousness. And then it's another level when people instruct us. But then when someone agrees to take a real, you know, ongoing parental role, and as Prabhupada writes in one CC purport in that first chapter, generally, when you hear the word generally, it means traditionally, historically. The one who gives the most shiksha becomes the Diksha Guru. Of course, what's confusing to us is that's not what we've seen in ISKCON's history. So we read that and we go, huh? But traditionally, that's the way it's worked in Vaishnav history, and we really seriously need to take a look at that if we're going to make this guru-disciple relationship in ISKCON sustainable.
Question. Mm-hmm. You're talking about levels of commitment. Hmm. But is it not possible to have an equal or greater level or equal level of commitment between Siksha Guru and a Siksha disciple as between Diksha and Siksha? Or maybe even greater in the sense that there's more communication? Is that possible?
Yeah.
Or is that not a traditional role?
No, that's true. That's true. And that very question arises from the fact that that's reality, that very often someone who initiates, the disciple may not have to see that person but once a year or once every 5 years or once every whatever it is, but then they have ongoing intimate relationships with seniors right where they're living. And again, we need to take a look at that, because as I mentioned last time, what do we want? Do we want a relatively few number of people taking care of hundreds, thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of disciples? Or do we want, as Prabhupada indicated in his letters especially, and in his spoken word, his talks, do we want hundreds, thousands? We even have one quote that Vanipedia person Vishnumurti found. We want 10 million gurus. In other words, what is Prabhupada getting at? We want many, 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 many people giving shelter to as many people as they can reasonably take care of.
Okay, I have something to say. I have been encouraging devotees from bhaktas all the way up to become gurus. Mm-hmm. And so basically by this statement, Prabhupada saying we want millions of gurus, it doesn't obviously mean everyone will be giving diksha. Mm-hmm. But it means everyone will be in some way taking some responsibility for someone. I mean, like you said, the Patta Guru, he puts you on the path. How do I get to Main Street? Oh, you just go straight and turn right at the first corner. Okay, I put you on the path. Mm-hmm. I may never see you again, mm-hmm. but you're on the path. But when you get to Main Street, somebody helps you, and that relationship may continue for more than a day. And so that's a kind of guru disciple relationship. So what I find is when I tell devotees, we're all meant to be gurus, goes in one ear and out the other. It's this thought that no one has considered. Mm-hmm. And Sana was writing me, and he said that he's preaching to a lot of people, and he is getting put in a guru position, and he's not even initiated. And he was, mm-hmm. But that's natural, because mm-hmm. if you're taking the time to teach, then you become guru. So at least we should plant that seed in everyone's mind that we're all meant to be guru on some level. Mm-hmm. To our friends, to our children, to co-workers, in some way.
Yeah, definitely.
Move them towards Krishna a little bit.
Right.
Or at least be willing to do that.
That's why I brought up last time that verse that Prabhupada quoted almost 300 times. Yare dako tare kaha Krishna upadesh amara gyai guru hanya tare desh. As Ridhananda Maharaj pointed out in last spring's Prabhupada festival in L.A., it's not so much that Prabhupada was concerned that we would compete with him and imitate him, although that happened. We had a zonal acharya era in ISKCON, and we're still recovering from it. He was more concerned that we wouldn't step up and take responsibility to give the matchless gift to others in a very serious and sincere way. Therefore, in all kinds of venues and contexts, whether to reporters or to intimate, you know, morning walk or room conversations, Prabhupada was quoting this verse. Yare dako, whoever you meet, tare kaha, tell them. Krishna upadesh, tell them what Krishna says. Amara gyai guru hanya, by my order, Lord Chaitanya says. Tare desh, you save this land, you save this place. And when Prabhupada would quote that verse, he would say, little thing, strictly follow. Of course, it's no little thing, it's a big thing. You know, to be that serious and sincere that you're fit to give shelter to others, either in a diksha or shiksha role.
Okay, so in other words, what you're saying, that generally when we tell people you should become guru, the natural response is, number one, I'm not qualified. Number two, there's the thought of, well, people will honor me. I don't deserve to be honored. Perhaps I don't, you know, follow as strictly as I should. I'm not the ideal example. Guru means acharya. And what Rita Anandamarsh is saying, the fault is, as you said, we don't step up to the plate and deal with all those handicaps and say, okay, the handicaps may be there, but on my order, I'm asking you to do this. So it's not service to look at all your faults and reasons to not do it, but it's service to figure out how you can become qualified. I just posted something on Facebook well, it's going to be posted if it's not yet posted, about this. Sometimes when we look at, well, if I really was empowered, I could do so much, and then we shy away from that, thinking, well, that wouldn't be right for me because I would lose my humility, or I would be doing better than another devotee who joined at the same time, and he would feel bad.
That's called false humility. In fact, here's a good example of what you're talking about. In Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami, everyone remembers this verse for some reason. They don't remember the verse that comes right after it. The verse is, I am lower than the worm in the stool. Whoever hears my name loses all pious credits, etc., etc., etc. Oh, he's so humble. We don't remember the very next verses where Kaviraj Goswami is saying, but I'm confident but that by the grace of my Lord Nityananda, I can overcome these. And now I'm forgetting the exact thing he says, but the idea is that he feels empowered by his spiritual master and spiritual masters to nevertheless go on. And as he's writing this, you know, he's
saying, okay, I recognize my fault, but in spite of that, I give myself to the...
I surrender to the order of my spiritual masters, and they can make me fit to pass it on.
It's like they say, if you're afraid of doing something, well, act in spite of your fear. Don't let it paralyze you. So many devotees are being paralyzed. I mean, I can understand why, you know, that's like me, be guru, what are you talking about? But I think younger devotees should understand the history. I was put as temple president, and I had only been a devotee 8 months. So temple president is a kind of guru, in a sense. We were given responsibilities for Sankirtan parties, for projects, and we were the main people guiding the devotees. We didn't have direct access. Very few had direct access to Prabhupada. So we were actually doing that, forced to do it. We had no other choice. We were put in the position. And so sometimes you don't really get introduced to yourself until you're put in a position like that, and then you realize, actually, I can do much more than I'm doing. I just haven't been in the position, and I'm not putting myself in the position. So we're trying to put you all in this position.
Why don't we go back to the history a little bit more? I don't know if I'm going to get through this, but that's okay, because I do have to leave at 7:30, our time. So the first reference is that from NOD, there's a hint right from Rupa Goswami that there's a difference between the spiritual master and the great acharyas, or teachers. They differ. They're one, but there's a difference. You always have to remember both sides. Now, contemporary or just after that, the next generation, we have from Srila Narottam Das Thakur, another great acharya in our line, whom Vishwanath, Chakravarti Thakur, his Shiksha disciple, said that, oh, the words in Narottam's songs, they're very simple Bengali language, but the meaning is very deep, and they're as good as Veda. So, after I was advised by my superiors in our Prabhupada Position Committee to find more Gaudiya references, I found this reference from Srila Narottam Das Thakur's Prarthana, which is a famous song collection, 57 songs. When I looked at this in the Vedapace, I didn't realize that so many songs from Prarthana we're already so intimately familiar with, like the Guru Puja song we sing, Sri Guru Charana Padma, Gauranga Bolite Habe, there's more, they're just slipping from my mind now, but Ye Anilo Prema Dhanna. Anyway, there's of those 57 songs, in Song 17, I'm not going to give you all the Bengali, but here is a song where Narottam is talking about his absolute exemplar, ideal, hero, shelter, and that's Srila Rupa Goswami. Now, remember at the same time that Narottam Das Thakur is the only Diksha disciple of Lokanath Goswami, who, you know, when we sing Lokanath Loke Rajivan, that's specifically to whom Narottam Das Thakur is singing. But here, listen to the words of Song 17. I'll just give you the English translation. Narottam says, I have heard from the mouths of pure devotees that by the mercy of Sri Rupa Goswami, one can attain the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Oh, my Lord, Sanatan Goswami, now he's addressing another Goswami, and the associates of Gauranga, all of you kindly fulfill my desires. And here's what he says. Let the mercy of Sri Rupa Goswami be upon me, for whoever has taken shelter of him is my master. And now here's the Bengali lines he says next, which is the key lines. Prabhu Lokanath kabhi sange laina jabe Sri Rupera padapadme more samarpibe, which means, when will my Lord Lokanath Goswami, now he's addressing his Diksha Guru, when will my Lord Lokanath Goswami take me with him and place me at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa? Will it ever happen to me that the dearmost Sakis will chastise their servant, Narottam Das? So he's begging his Diksha Guru, his initiating spiritual master, Lokanath, his life and soul, to take him to the, as Bhakti Guru Maharaj likes to say, because there was no phrase, Foundaracharya, that they call, he calls him the group leader. You know, we call Rupa Goswami our Rasacharya. Prabhupada said he's the chief Goswami for relishing the mellows of devotional service. So Narottam is praying, when will Lokanath take me to Rupa? So the relevant point is that even though Narottam is the sole Diksha disciple of Srila Lokanath Goswami, he is begging his Diksha Guru to place him under the shelter of their group leader, Srila Rupa Goswami, who is none other than Rupa Manjari.
It's kind of like you want to go to a good college, but of course you don't have the funding, so you ask your parents, would you pay? I want to go to Harvard, I want to go to Yale. And your parents are saying, well, you know, that's like $80,000 a year. So yeah, but if I go, then I'll get this position, you know, and I'll be making $300,000 a year. So within a couple of years, we'll pay for it all. Would you send me? Why do you want to go? Because they have the best teachers. So mm-hmm. It doesn't minimize the affection and what you've learned from your parents.
Not at all. And in fact, that's the beauty. This comes up a little later, but I don't know if we're going to get to it. When the founder Acharya is really, really, really becomes the absolute core relationship and identity of all followers for all generations in his line, everybody is glorified and all the relationships become very thick and sweet. On a manifest human level, it might even appear that someone who's enriching and enhancing my relationship with the founder Acharya, it might appear that that relationship is preeminent, is paramount. And in a sense, it is, because I'm able to, you know, see that person face to face. A better word than living guru is manifest guru, because whoever is manifest in front of us, it's natural that they're going to assume a very important, prominent place in our lives. But why? Because the founder Acharya is the center of that relationship, and he's simply enriching my relationship with all of our core identity, as in our case, Prabhupada Nugas.
So the Diksha Guru, the Siksha Guru, is handing, in a sense, handing the disciple over to the founder Acharya, or in a process of always...
It's simultaneous. You know, yes, introducing, enriching, enhancing, but that relationship is going on concurrently. It's a never-ending process of enrichment. And therefore, I don't know if I told the story a couple of weeks ago, but about the lady who didn't take Diksha for 17 years in ISKCON, which is a very common scenario. Anyway, she finally took Diksha when she found somebody who was initiating, who understood that his function as Diksha Guru at ISKCON is to enhance your relationship with the founder Acharya. And so when she gave me her memoir, her interview about this point, she said, and Sureshwar Prabhu, I can tell you that not only has, you know, Maharaj kept his promise of enhancing, enriching my relationship with Srila Prabhupada, who I knew all along, you know, for years and years and years, was my foundational spiritual master, but now, because of his surrender to Prabhupada and his transparency to Prabhupada, he's also taken his place at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada in my heart. So that is transparency, and that's the way the parampara goes.
So, and that's natural.
It's natural.
If somebody is bringing you closer to Prabhupada, that person, of course, becomes dear to you for doing that.
No one is slighted. No one is left out, no one is minimized, all these fears, you know, because of the Ritvik reaction to the imitation of Prabhupada.
Okay. A lot of you don't know, we've discussed the history of ISKCON. There was a time in ISKCON where the the role of guru predominated so much or pervaded the society in such a way that
Nishin guru was,
how should we say, it was kind of pushing Prabhupada out of dead center. Sometimes pushing him very far in the back, whereas people felt that they had absolutely no relation with Prabhupada. And the only way, they only had relation with their guru, they didn't really understand Prabhupada. And there was a reaction to that where devotees saw that now that Prabhupada's out of the center, there are problems in ISKCON. So they concluded that actually nobody should have initiated, because that put Prabhupada out of the center. The only way to keep him in the center is to not initiate disciples. That's called Ritvik. Zonal Acharya is when one person predominated and practically had their own little ISKCON.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the center of that ISKCON, and Prabhupada was...
history.
Yeah. I guess that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah, I literally, because not long ago I went to a website of a prominent temple in our movement. It's since changed, since I gave my input. And I couldn't find Prabhupada on their website, on their homepage. Yeah. Where did I finally find him? Under the tab marked history. Literally.
Oh my God.
I pointed this out to some leader in the yatra, and he was mortified. And and now you go on their homepage and you can find Srila Prabhupada. So, okay. So after Narottam, or I have to do a little more research of the exact timeline, but right around the same time, we're talking 16th century now, after Mahaprabhu has disappeared, Srila Jiva Goswami, the Goswamis are very key in this whole evolution of the founder Acharya concept. Srila Jiva Goswami, he founded, I don't know how formal it was, but it was called the Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha, which literally means, if you take Vishva, universal or world, and Sabha, assembly or congregation. And then the Vaishnav Raj happens to be Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the king devotee, the king of devotees. So Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha, quote, the universal congregation of the king of devotees, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he organized that, along with being the greatest philosopher among the Goswamis. Jiva Goswami was a great organizer. As we know, he organized the first book distribution party to start distributing all these literatures that the Goswamis were compiling. And that included Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu. Who's the other one? I always forget. Shyamananda, Narottam, and there's another one. Anyway, so Jiva organized that. He organized the Seva at Radhadamodar Temple. And he organized some kind of association. I don't think it was incorporated like we have ISKCON, but it was, again, the beginning of something organized. Now, as we know, by Mahaprabhu's inscrutable will, for a couple of centuries, Mahaprabhu's pure message was eclipsed by so many sahajas, mayavadis, just upa sampradayas. And so it wasn't until the 19th century that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he actually, among one of the many things that Thakur did was he revived the Sabha. He took off the Vishva, he just called Vaishnav Raj, Vishri Vaishnav Raj Sabha. And it's the Thakur who now, in his work, Harinama Chintamani, I mentioned this before, but I'm going to give a little more specifics now in this presentation. He planted the seeds in Harinama Chintamani of what we now know as founder Acharya. Along with glorifying the holy name in Harinama Chintamani, he had some very interesting things to say about the guru-disciple relationship. And in chapter 6 of Harinama Chintamani, we find a Sanskrit stanza which includes four key phrases which became the seeds, if you will, of the early 20th century phrase founder Acharya, which, as I mentioned last time, was coined by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and or his scholarly disciple, Professor Nishikant Sanyal, first appearing in the Harmonist. But let's look at the 19th century reference, the Harinama Chintamani. There is These Sanskrit phrases. The work was written in Sanskrit, so there's no question of the Thakura coining Founder-Acharya per se because it was a Sanskrit work. But definitely the seeds are there. We find in this particular stanza the phrase Adiguru, which is referring to the originator of the Sampradaya. We find Sampradaya Acharya. In other words, the Sampradaya is not simply a Sampradaya of it's not a family, it's not a caste, it's not a family, it's not a family Sampradaya, but it's a line of teachers who are living the teachings, and they're exemplars. And they also become, if they're that powerful, they establish their own branches, they become what's called, the Thakur says, Shiksha Guru Pratishtha, foundational Shiksha Gurus.
But It's incorrect to say we are in the Prabhupada Sampradaya.
Yeah, that's coming. But the point, that's a little over the top.
Some people, I'm just bringing that up, is because some devotees say that out of affection or dedication.
Yeah, but religion without philosophy is
not correct.
But it is correct that the Sampradaya is a Sampradaya of Acharyas, people who walk the talk, live the teachings, who are exemplars of the teachings. It's not simply some sentimental family line or caste line. And now we have the final seed phrase in this Harinama Chintamani stanza, Guru Shiromani, that these people who are very powerful, that become foundational Shiksha Gurus in the line coming from the originator of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. The first one, by the way, that it appeared, is Lakshmi, as the consort of none other than Vishnu himself. She was the first Adi Guru.
And then, women gurus.
Yeah.
The first guru was a woman.
First guru was a woman, you bet.
Whoa. Leslie, you like that?
And then there's Brahma, who was begotten, as the Christians say, begotten directly of the Father, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. He appeared from the lotus of Vishnu's navel. And then there's Lord Shiva, the glance of Vishnu. And then the mental sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, they actually established the last Vaishnava Sampradaya. So this Guru Shiromani, this is the last phrase in the Thakur's Harinama Chintamani, he is the Shiromani, means the crest jewel, money, jewel, Shiro, top. So he becomes a crest jewel guru of that Sampradaya, that Shiksha Guru Pratishtha, that foundational guru. Now this, in Harinama Chintamani, the Thakur is talking about mainly the Adi Gurus of the Sampradaya, but he plants seeds of phrases which imply that those who come after the Adi Gurus, the originators of the Sampradaya, also have a direct connection with those originators. Now, it's only implied, it's only suggested, but that suggested connection, that implied connection, is made explicit in the early 20th century by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his scholarly disciple, Professor Nishikant Sanyal, whom I talked about last time, especially when the Thakur commissioned Sanyal to write Sri Krishna Chaitanya, which is the book that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta knew that those preachers needed to go to Europe, to finally take the Vaishnava message outside of the borders of Bharatvarsh, after he brilliantly had established, so many Gaudiya Mats and initiated 60,000, or is in the process of initiating 60,000 disciples. He has the vision of his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whom Prabhupada called the pioneer of the Krishna consciousness movement, who pioneered everything from the GBC and the macro level all the way down to, Nam Huts on the local level. So Saraswati Thakur commissioned this book, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and it's in the very introduction and table of contents to that book that we find that connection made explicit. I don't know if you want me to repeat that explicit connection, but right in the table of contents to chapter 7, it's called the Founder Acharyas to this book, Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
So that's the first place that word in English appears.
Well, it actually did appear a few... This is 1933. The book was finally published. It appeared first, the phrase, in a 1930 edition of The Harmonist, which was an English reincarnation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sajjanam Toshini. It reappeared in 1927 as The Harmonist. In a 1930 edition of The Harmonist, we don't know if the Thakur coined it or if Sanyal coined it, because they were like, you know, so close, working on literary projects. But it's in that, it's an edition of The Harmonist in 1930 where you find that the Thakur is referred to as variously the President Acharya and also Founder Acharya.
Okay, so for those who weren't here for the past classes or all of them, you may wonder, well, why are we discussing, why is this so important? And the reason is because Prabhupada established his position as the Founder Acharya. And he considered that essential to be understood and put into practice for success of our own spiritual lives and for the success of ISKCON and its healthy continuation. So the fact that he stressed it, and at any time his position was, that position of his was minimized, he strongly reacted and saw it as a minimization, as offensive, and so forth. So the position of Founder Acharya needs to be understood clearly and carefully and deeply by all of us, because Prabhupada is our Founder Acharya, and he wanted that to be understood. His instructions, I may give instructions, Sureshwari may give instructions, so many of us may give instructions, we are only representing the teachings, and also not only representing the teachings, but a mistake that can be made is that someone represents only a portion of the teachings, and it doesn't create a balanced presentation of Prabhupada, mm-hmm. and it doesn't represent his mood. Mm-hmm. So in Prabhupada establishing himself as Founder Acharya, there's also the mood and the goals he had for ISKCON. It's all, to me at least, it's all part of that, what it means to follow the Founder Acharya. You know, I could be stressing something which Prabhupada stressed, but he stressed many things I may not stress. And then it's like just eating chapatis for lunch. I say, well, Prabhupada ate chapatis, but I'm only serving chapatis. So that's not a balanced meal. So that's another, I think, another aspect of the importance of understanding what is Prabhupada's mood and how we are meant to represent that mood, which is a balanced mood of Krishna consciousness. Right. Otherwise, you get people who just want to live in Radhakund and relish Leela, and who may not be qualified for. Even if they are qualified, it may not be what Prabhupada wanted them to do, because Prabhupada stressed giving Krishna consciousness around the world. So, you know, in some cases, people may do that, and that's their service. But in general, that's an example that Prabhupada preached against, and he had disciples that did it. Mm-hmm. You have the other extreme. People preached to the point where they fell into Maya. They neglected their sadhana. So there's a balance in the middle. It's not one or all. But you can see, if you study Prabhupada's teachings, his mood was very balanced. And so understanding the Founder Acharya means also his representing his mood in your own life and when you teach.
That's so important, Mahaprabhu, because Prabhupada, we have to think of the Founder Acharya, our Founder Acharya, like the sun. He's so powerful that it's not that one guru or group of gurus even has a monopoly or comprehends the extent of Prabhupada's mercy. It's really only in the well-rounded and non-envious sangha of serious and sincere devotees that the full, if you will, Prabhupada emerges, and we need that. So let's go back to the history a little bit. In 1933, in that book, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Professor Sanyal, and by the way, Siddhanta Saraswati, sat down for 2 months before this book was published, and he carefully edited every page of this book. This is reported by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj and his Bhakti Siddhanta.
And also Prabhupada.
What's that?
Prabhupada mentions.
Okay.
Because he was asked if that book is bona fide.
Yes, yes. So Sanyal writes in his introduction, the systems of Sri Vishnu Swami, who is the Founder Acharya in Kali Yuga representing Lord Shiva, Sri Nimbaditya, means Nimbarka, which is representing the Kumaras, Sri Ramanuja, who represents Lakshmi, and Sri Madhva, who represents Brahma, mark the revival of Vaishnavism traceable to the prehistoric records. They embody the reverential worship of Vishnu. So everybody, the four sampradayas, they relate to God variously, but there's no disagreement about that God's a person. So the four communities, Sanyal continues, of the Iron Age are connected with the ancient times by their recognition of the ulterior, he means remote, authority of the eternal ancient teachers, namely Lakshmi, Brahma, Rudra, and the four Kumaras, respectively. The four founder acharyas of the Iron Age profess to preach the views of those original teachers of the religion. So there you get an explicit connection between the founder acharya, between the Adi Gurus, you know, the originators of the sampradayas that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about in Harinama Chintamani, and those super powerful preachers in the Kali Yuga who revitalize and refresh and reinvigorate those sampradayas, and they take them in a dynamic direction.
So for us, that's Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma is our prehistoric, if you will.
Adi Guru.
Adi Guru. And then Madhva is the super reinvigorator of the Brahma Sampradaya by preaching heavily against Mayavad. And then, of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is able to reconcile the oneness of Shankara with the Shuddha Dvaita, the pure dualism of Madhva in his Achintya Veda Veda Tattva presentation.
Now, this is interesting because these great acharyas are amalgamating and presenting something that takes the sampradaya, you could say, to another level. And
Prabhupada, or to a relevant level for that time and place.
So Prabhupada's contribution was that he didn't come up with some new or amalgamated Siddhanta, but that he made it, number one, understandable, palatable, and acceptable, and got it accepted. And so his position is a little different than theirs, but in a sense more important because he brought it outside of India. So it's just, but it's not like one day I'm going to wake up and go, oh, here's the next revelation for our sampradaya. That's not our position. Even if I am a Diksha Guru, that's not my position. I may have a revelation of understanding something that Prabhupada wanted that I didn't understand earlier, but not something that he didn't want. And now I'm revealing that he actually does want.
Yeah, now we're sort of sailing toward the difference between principles and details, which is a very important issue, a little off topic. But if you want to read a little more Prabhus out there in cyberspace, you look at Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavatam 141 and 1516 about those who would be in the sampradaya, who would represent the sampradaya. They have to find the ways and means to represent, literally present all over again, the message of the sampradaya in ways that are relevant to the time, the place, the audience. This is what it means, actually, to represent.
So principles are universal and details are time, place.
Applications, exactly, and they're unlimited.
So you get, if you see a detail as a principle, then you've got trouble, or you create trouble.
Right.
Or vice versa.
Just like Srila Prabhupada said, because I have made this adjustment, we mentioned this last time. What was the adjustment he was referring to? The adjustment of allowing men and women to live in the same temple community. His godbrothers had a real problem with that. Why are you doing this? And they quoted this Bhagavatam verse from the 7th canto, the man is like a butter pot, the woman's like fire, you put the fire too close to the butter pot, and it melts, and there's havoc. And certainly in ISKCON, those things have happened, but Srila Prabhupada's principle, overarching principle, was giving everyone access to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that was the only way to do it in the Western countries, where boys and girls are educated the same way, they freely mix, you know, since they're little kids. So Prabhupada allowed men and women the same access to his mercy.
Plus they were already hanging out together, so
they're already hanging.
And he also understood that just by teaching them Krishna consciousness, they'll understand gradually, mm-hmm. you know, the need for whatever the healthy need there is for separation, it'll naturally evolve, which it did.
Yeah.
It actually evolved too far at one point.
Yeah, exactly. So let's look at that Harinama Chintamani verse now in the light of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's illustrious son, Srila Saraswati Thakur, his fine editing of Sanyal's book, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Let's look at the translation of that Harinama Chintamani verse. And you do find the word Founder Acharya in there. Okay, so here it is. If I can find it in my notes. Okay. So.
So the point is, Prabhupada using the word Founder Acharya,
it comes from his Guru Maharaj.
Yeah, it's not that he didn't create it.
He didn't make it up.
And he understood, I think we were talking about this before, he understood that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission had failed, so he created a duplicate with the same principles. So there had to be Founder Acharya as there was in Gaudiya Math. That was a necessary ingredient for the success.
Exactly.
Preservation, the longevity of the organization. So he just duplicated it, made himself the Founder Acharya. So you may ask, well, Prabhupada's so humble, why is he assisting on this person? His position as Founder Acharya, because it's an essential ingredient for the success of the movement. Otherwise, someone else would come in and say, and they have tried to say, I'm actually the inheritor of ISKCON, or I'm the guru of ISKCON. And then, well, we need to replace Prabhupada's books with the new guru's books, and, you know, we need to archive his lectures, and Prabhupada's lectures were just good for those people. You know, Prabhupada saw all that, and he knew without establishing his position as Founder Acharya, that would likely happen. It's already been attempted in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, and he is the Founder Acharya, and it's been attempted. And so the GBC maintains Prabhupada. That's one of the services they have, is to maintain Prabhupada's position and right. Fulfill his desires, represent his desires.
Exactly. Okay, so let's look at the translation of the Thakur stanza in light of that explicit connection that his own Raya Vishnu's son made. Here's the translation. In the disciplic succession of Vaishnavas, the previous acharyas are established respectfully as shiksha gurus for the sampradaya. And that's beginning with the Adi Guru, the originator of the sampradaya. There's the original shiksha gurus, and then there's those who come after him who are powerfully representing him. However, the Thakur says, the founder acharya, or original guru of a disciplic succession, is appropriately worshipped and respected as the crown jewel, Guru Shiromani, topmost of the spiritual masters. His perfect philosophical conclusions are to be followed by all in the Sampradaya. That means in his line, his branch of the line. Any contrary instructions will not be accepted.
Okay, so how does this relate? How does this relate now, or does it? Sometimes we read something and Acharya says, but it doesn't, at least in detail. In principle, I think it's the same, although that could be different. It's generally more in detail. It differs. How do we understand it? Because there's a lot of books out now, and a lot of these books represent what the Acharyas are saying. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll read something in the book and you won't know that that's not exactly the way Prabhupada explained it.
Right.
Until
right.
someone tells you, or you find out later.
Right.
So.
Yeah, this is very important, and we brought it up last time, how the phrase, no jumping over, came into being. And it was really misused during the Zonal Acharya era, but in the late 1973, Prabhupada gave a lecture in Los Angeles, in which what he had in his mind was the fact that devotees were going to India more and more, and some had approached him, some leaders had approached him, that can we read these books we're seeing in the Gaudiya Math from your spiritual master? And Srila Prabhupada's response, I don't have the quote in front of me now, but the gist of it was, you can't understand what my spiritual master is saying unless you hear it from me. Don't jump over your Guru Maharaj. Now, remember, This is what we didn't realize at the time, and we're realizing more and more, that when Srila Prabhupada makes statements like this, he's not only speaking, as I mentioned, as the Diksha Guru of 4,800 ex-hippies, but he's speaking as the founder Acharya of all generations of his followers in the line, in the ISKCON line, ISKCON branch, for all time. So he's speaking as a founder Acharya. So he's saying, you don't understand the previous Acharyas, you know, my Guru Maharaj or anybody, the Goswamis, unless you hear it from me. And so, that's the Bhaktivedanta purport.
Okay, so then we can say, all right, if I read a book by a previous Acharya or a commentary, then I have to understand it in light of what Srila Prabhupada taught.
Exactly.
And if something comes out which differs, then I accept it as a detail for that time and place, mm-hmm. and I don't preach that. Or I might say, Prabhupada said, the Acharyas said, we could understand this, we could understand that, but we follow this. Because, I mean, the argument people could give is say, wait a minute, Prabhupada was speaking to people who have been a devotee a year. Of course they couldn't understand Bhaktisiddhanta now. There are so many books that we're capable of understanding, and many devotees have translated these books, many devotees study these books, they're taught at MIHE, VIHE. But I think the point is they're always taught in relation to the Siddhanta that Prabhupada has given us.
Exactly.
When it's not, I personally have experience in counseling devotees, it creates a problem because someone is presenting a Siddhanta. I don't know if I told this story, but one devotee left ISKCON, took shelter of another Vaishnava, I believe in Radha Kundu. And then he wrote Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you can't become Krishna conscious unless you chant 64 rounds a day, because that was the instruction he received and that's what he was doing. You can't attain prema. And Prabhupada said, not to this devotee, but Prabhupada said to the devotees who were with him at the time, said, you cannot force Krishna to give you prema. So we're following the instructions of our gurus. And Prabhupada said 16, of course you can chant more, 16 minimum, and Prabhupada didn't emphasize 64 because he wanted us to use those other 6 hours it would take to spread Krishna consciousness. You can figure out how to get those other 6 hours, more power to you. But for most people, they couldn't do that, and he wanted to utilize those other 6 hours or 8 hours in spreading Krishna consciousness.
Yes, our founder Acharya's emphasis was the preaching mission, and he makes it very clear. I don't have chapter and verse in front of me, but we bring up in the founder Acharya seminar that a fourth canto purport where Prabhupada says, rather than trying to see Krishna in some bush in Vrindavan, better to give your life to the mission of Lord Chaitanya and the spiritual master, which is to preach Krishna consciousness. That was Lord Chaitanya's emphasis. Yare daka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. That you spread this. And the more you do that, the more you're enriched and the more the supply increases. And Prabhupada and his infinite wisdom and vision, which soars off to the end of the yuga, practically, he knew that international devotees, you know, given where we're coming from in the Kali Yuga, we would get a lot more, so to speak, mileage. We would come a lot closer to Krishna by doing this, by coming to the Dham, taking shelter, taking sustenance, and returning to our preaching fields and spreading Krishna consciousness. We would become so much more dear to Krishna that way than trying to imitate some Babaji Radha Kund. And even Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, there's nobody in this world more dear to me than that person who's preaching my glories.
There's another factor also, which it's clear that Prabhupada emphasized, was that he was training all of his disciples in a particular way. So he understood and felt that even though we may not be as advanced as other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, our association was actually more beneficial. Because by the association of God brothers, they're clarifying the mission and mood and instructions given by Srila Prabhupada. Whereas hearing from others is sometimes confusing because they may be representing something, some teaching or principle or detail, which Srila Prabhupada did not present to us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, objectively it looks like, well, wait a minute, if I associate with this person, I will get more. And in one sense, it's true, you will get more understanding perhaps philosophically, but in the process you might get some understanding that was not what Prabhupada wanted us to understand or gave us, or get some practical instruction which differed or is against or what Prabhupada wanted. So that's interesting, you know, how Prabhupada always, he always emphasized or honored the value of association when he, you know, because Shastra does, but that association was us. That's who he was talking about, and that us in the beginning of the movement meant very young devotees, not with a lot of realization, but they had a lot of faith in what Prabhupada wanted. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of faith in Prabhupada's instructions. And Prabhupada saw that, and that was, I think, the most important thing in that sangha. Mm-hmm. So now it's 7:31. You want to do some closing words?
Yeah, I'm just going to wrap up by reminding our listening audience about those symptoms of a founder acharya mentioned in the Harinama Chintamani, which explicitly apply to an Adi Guru of a sampradaya. But now that we know that there is an explicit connection with the founder acharyas who come after the Adi Gurus, again, here's symptoms. A founder acharya possesses great spiritual strength. His teachings supersede all others and are compulsory for his followers. Now again, supersede doesn't mean the founder acharya pretends to surpass the previous acharyas, but he has the gift, he's empowered to know how to appropriately present the teachings of the previous acharyas relevant for the modern age.
So as we said, precedence is always given to his understanding.
Yes, yes. Deference. Holds a unique post. You don't replace a founder acharya. The founder acharya is like the sun, and if we're following him, we are blessed to become like moons in his firmament, if you will. And is the acharya or leader of all Vaishnavas when physically present, which was certainly the case, even at the end when Prabhupada made peace with his godbrothers, when he apologized to them for speaking so strongly and saying things that must have offended them, and they admitted, no, you're not Mahapatita, you're not greatly fallen like you say, you're Mahapatita Pavana. You saved so many jagas and madas, and you rule us, you know, you're our leader. And he's so powerful that he awards power of attorney, the Thakur says, to his followers who strictly adhere to his teachings. Doesn't mean you have to be, you know, Mahabhagavat, Uttamadikari, Supergirl, Superman, to be an initiating guru. It just means you follow.
I mean, look what, like Prabhupada used to say, what my godbrothers could not do in London was done by grihasthas.
Yeah.
And those grihasthas probably had only been devotees about 1 to 2 years.
Yeah.
And look what they were able to do. Or just look what happened, how ISKCON developed. And it was all being done by people, strictly speaking, objectively speaking, are not that realized and not advanced. But what was the qualification? They were adhering to the instruction of the person who could guide them in how to do it. And Krishna reciprocated.
Solid Guru Nishtha, firm faith in that resident of Vrindavan, our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, who was the Umantra Upasaka, who was that worshipper of the holy name predicted 5,000 years ago in the Brahmavavarta Purana, I brought this up last time, who did spread the holy name all over the world, who was that Senapati Bhakta mentioned in Sri Chaitanya Mangala, that great military field general that Lord Chaitanya told Narada that I will send, you know, even if the non-believers flee to foreign countries, you know, outside of Varsh, basically, Videshis, you know, foreigners. He's the resident of Vrindavan. But as Mahaprabhu, I just want to end with this quote that comes up in 1974, when even after Prabhupada announced that he was in the founder acharya of ISKCON in 1970, when he created the directions of management, when he created the GBC, and he announced that he was the founder acharya, in those few short years between 70 and 74, there was already imitations. There was already people leaving ISKCON, setting themselves up as Jagat Guru and Prabhupada. This happened. So the GBC saw fit, at Prabhupada's prompting, to draft this amendment to those original directions of management documents, which Prabhupada personally signed off on. Here's the document talking about Prabhupada in the third
person. This was done in Prabhupada's presence.
In Prabhupada's presence, that he signed off on. Quote, this is a GBC resolution which Prabhupada endorsed. It is declared that His Divine Grace, A.C., Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is the founder acharya of ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He is the supreme authority in all matters of the society. His position cannot be occupied by anyone else, and his name and title must appear on all documents, letterheads, publications, and buildings of the society, because that had already happened.
And websites.
And now.
It was added last year. Some devotees didn't have Prabhupada predominantly displayed on their website.
Yes. Yes. So why was this passed? Because already, right in Prabhupada's presence, Kali Yuga is so pernicious and so wacko that you have to reassert the obvious, you know, which should be common sense. It's not. Common sense is uncommon in Kali Yuga. The final quote I'd like to leave you with.
But I think also because Prabhupada's not physically present and there are many great devotees physically present, it's, if we don't monitor it, it's natural that it's not anyone's fault, it's just kind of natural. He's a great devotee, people honor him, respect him, hear from him, worship him, honor him, and they can lose, they can misunderstand or lose the connection he has with Prabhupada and where his power is coming from. And say, like I said before, well, I don't understand Prabhupada, I just understand my guru.
That's why all Shikshan Diksha gurus have to educate and train their disciples in this foundational relationship we all have. Here's a quote that Prabhupada said in Caracas in 1975, February. He was lecturing on Bhagavatam 111, Janmadyasyataha, how Krishna is he's the origin of creation, he knows everything directly and indirectly about everything in the creation. And then in passing, Prabhupada makes this analogy to himself as the founder of Acharya of ISKCON. Listen to this. Prabhupada, I'm going to embed this with Prabhupada's voice in this seminar. It's going to be really powerful.
Do it now.
Well, I don't want to. I've been a little chastened by my godbrothers. You can do it in a light moment, Sureshwar, when Prabhupada's making a joke.
Oh.
But when you make a grave point, don't imitate the voice. And I agree. It's not appropriate. So here's what Prabhupada says. Quote, this is Caracas, 21 Feb, 75. So here it is said that origin is life. Because here it is said, Yaton Vayadi Taratas Charteshva Bhigyat Svara, which means that Krishna is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent. And then Prabhupada gives an example. Just like if I am taken as the origin of this Krishna consciousness movement, that means I know everything, directly and indirectly, of all this movement. If I do not know directly or indirectly everything of this movement, then I cannot be called the founder Acharya. And as soon as the origin him becomes a knower. In other words, as soon as you acknowledge that the cause is a conscious being, he is life. So that's why he, the founder Acharya, is the life and soul of that disciplic line. And we can never neglect that foundation, that foundational life, teachings, mood, and mission. And when we keep that the center, as Mahaprabhu, this is a challenge. You know, to have strong guru-disciple relationships, but also have a strong oversight in the GBC. You know, you need both. They're complementary. And this is what the Gaudiya Math people didn't get, and that's why the Gaudiya Math imploded and became, in our founder Acharya's words, useless, asara, because they didn't see how the strong guru-disciple relationships, these teacher-student relationships that we need, that we urgently need, these manifest relationships we need, are complementary with a governing body, which is the ultimate managing authority, which means they manage the preaching mission, and they have to work together. The key to making that work together is a common focus, again, on the life, the teachings, the mood and mission of our common relationship, our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Very good.
Sorry I have to go. There's a lot more, and I hope... will you be here in March? I'm going to give a new edition of this.
Yeah.
And then you can...
Is your seminar online?
It is in an earlier edition, which isn't bad. It's good. It's just not... It's going to be even better, I think. You know, perfect, more perfect, most perfect. It increases unlimitedly.
It'll... Yeah. It'll always get better. But if they want to look at it, where?
Yes. Okay. If you go to... Now, this website is in the process of moving to another website address, but I think the old address is still there. If you go to ISKCON, get the hyphen in there, or else you go to the wrong place. ISKCON-Hawaii, HAWAII.com. And then you you select the tab called Seminars. And then you go into Seminars, and then you will see under Past Seminars, because it's been a while now, the seminar, it's called Srila Prabhupada, Our Founder Acharya. You select that seminar. It's got a little box with a little picture. Select that. Then you'll go into my seminar, and you'll see a list, first of all, of the 10 lessons in the seminar. And by the way, I'm reworking these lessons, but you see the lessons. And then you scroll down from that lesson list into what's called the video archive. And then you will see in YouTube format the lessons, you know, with the right-facing arrow.
They need a new web programmer.
What's it?
They need a new web programmer. That's, like, too complicated.
Anyway, you just...
There must be one link to just get you there. But anyway...
Just go to... It's just the iscon-hawaii.com. Yeah. You know,
you'll get
website,
there.
And you'll go to seminars.
Past seminars, through the Prabhupada Founder Acharya.
And then you come to my seminar and you scroll down to the YouTube videos.
Okay, we got it.
You got it. And stay tuned for a better edition coming up in March with all these Gaudiya references.
Jai. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So I will stay a little longer to answer some of the questions. And Bhakti and Carol has asked the difference, if there is one, between listening to a pure devotee, the Founder Acharya chant japa, and listening to the chanting of other levels of devotees. There's an objective answer and a subjective answer. We, during our japa workshops, we listen to Prabhupada chanting. And then I ask the devotees, what do you hear? What do you feel? And they say, I hear someone who's completely present with Krishna, who's concentrating on Krishna, who's praying to Krishna, who's relishing Krishna. So yes, hearing the vibration of pure devotee is special. It's pure, it's the pure holy name. Hearing the vibration of other devotees is also inspiring. I can't say it's not inspiring. I can't say you shouldn't be inspired. But naturally, there is a difference in the vibration of those who are more advanced. Now, you might say, well, I get equally inspired by others. All right. If that's the case, good. It's not bad. It's not a problem. But I think objectively we can say, yeah, that vibration is coming from the love of Krishna. So it's carrying that love, and therefore it is of a different nature. So. Okay. Now, does anyone have any other questions? You can chat your questions in, if you have any. You don't have to have any, it's okay. I hope, I'm going to put all these lectures online. They're important. I think they need to be heard again and again. What Sureshwar is doing in conjunction with the GBC is to help clarify Prabhupada's position. And the reason that it's necessary is because in some places it's these things we're discussing are not completely clear to everybody. And therefore, when things externally are different than what they should be, sometimes it's hard to understand them because we're hearing something which we don't see. And the way we see it, the way it's within the culture of ISKCON, is the way we tend to understand it as a principle and a detail and as a philosophy. And so therefore, sometimes it's difficult to understand the philosophy when we don't see it practically. So, therefore, I recommend that you listen to these talks again. If you go to krishna.com/mahatma, and then you scroll down to Prabhupada, the lectures will be there. I don't know if they've put them up, but I've uploaded them. But krishna.com has to actually get it on their server. But I've uploaded it to them, and I will remind them. Okay. Thank you, everyone. I'm going to go now, since you have no more questions. And we will see you next week. And next week, I will be broadcasting from Bangalore. I'll be in Bangalore doing two workshops. Very excited. Two new workshops never done before, which could be Mahatma's new prototype workshop. To go to the depths of what we're looking at, the depths of Maya and how we got there and how we can shoot ourselves out at Krishna's lotus feet. Okay. Good night, everyone, or good morning, depending where you are. Hare Krishna.
That was the first time I aired that new research. I still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Anna is saying confusing to hear so many other regulations. This is part of, wouldn't you say, organizational spreading of Krishna consciousness. So much of what we're talking about is, you know, if there wasn't an organization, these things may not be relevant.
Yeah, but that's what we need to make it very
Doctrine. So Prabhupada came to us, you know, like if we're just talking about traditional guru-disciple relationships, and, you know, then some of what we said would not be untrue, but not so relevant. Okay.